Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
So now we're taking that there's liberation, there's bondage. So liberation comes when one gravitates towards the Lord. When one connects oneself to the Lord, then liberation takes place. When one turns away from the Lord, then bondage takes place. Very, very simple. It's not that there's some other method for it. It's not by the austerities and charity and sacrifice that that's what gets you the Lord. It's by doing those things in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? Sir? No, just looking, it's got, it's close. It's got eight sides instead of six on it. No, the star.
Oh yeah, it's all combined.
The star of Agni.
Yeah, eight, six, and then five.
Oh, okay.
So say if someone is doing service, like we get many devotees outside the temple, they support the mission of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. So even within the temple, sometimes we find certain devotees don't have good sadhana, but they put in serving the mission.
Mm-hmm.
Would they get the same benefit, or what do you think?
Means you always get benefit. If you support the mission, you get benefit. Like that. So Prabhupada mentions that the person who gives the money for doing the puja and the one who does the puja to get the same benefit. Like that. The point is that, but, you know, someone like that, it's they're getting the benefit, but it's coming in the, if they know what's going on, then it's devotional benefit. If it's they don't know, it's just, you know, they just, like the devotees, like to give some money, but don't understand devotional service, then it's a jnata sukriti, which will then end, you know, culminate in them taking up devotional service. So the point is to be engaged. So those who can follow nicely the sadhana and everything, then they should be doing that. You get the best benefit. It's the most dynamic. Those who can't, then follow those who are and do what they can. You know, they'll always get benefit. It's not that, well, if you didn't chant 16 rounds and if you wash pots, you don't get any spiritual benefit. No, you get benefit. But it's just, you add that all up, you get more benefit. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you eat one chapati, you get benefit. But if you eat chapatis and sabji, then you get more benefit. Does that make sense? Like that. So that sincerity to assist and to be engaged and have that proper attitude, then that's always beneficial. So there's never a problem. Right? So in other words, you engage everyone according to their capacity. Does that make sense? Someone who has more capacity should do more. Someone who has less capacity, they do less. But the point is everybody is fully engaged according to their ability. You know what I'm saying? So that means according to their natural nature, you know, inherent nature, what aspects of their nature are engageable in Krishna's service, and then how much of that they can do. Does that make sense? Like that. Like you have a musician that he plays the drone. Right? So the drone is necessary in the music, but it's not that he has as much ability in music as others, but he's just as much of a musician as every of the others. You know what I'm saying? So his nature is the same, but his ability within that nature is less. Does that make sense? Yes, no, or that example didn't work. It's just like this. When you have a performance of music, right? You have the guy playing the sitar, right? And then you got to have the guy stand behind him playing the tambura. Okay? Now, are you going to go to a musical concert and listen to a tambura for 1 hour? No. But the person playing the tambura is also a musician. But his ability is only that much. You know what I'm saying? Unless he's a good musician who's playing for another musician that he respects. That also happens. Sometimes a top musician will play tambura for someone else he considers a better musician in a performance. But I'm saying that this is what the person plays, that's all he can do. You know what I'm saying? Or even more, you have in South India, you have the thing called the sur peti. It's a little box that you just squeeze, it's like a harmonium. All it does is play one note. You know? It does the same thing like a tambura. So that's all you have to do. But the person can sit there all day and do that. That means he's a musician. Does that make sense? So therefore you're engaging somebody for how much they can. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to identify the nature and ability. You know, so what is the kind of services they can do and how much of that they can do. Like the person, he likes distributing books, but he can only do it, you know, once a week on Saturday night. If he does more than that, then he starts to get disturbed. So you only engage him that time. You don't tell him he's in Maya, that he's not out 24/7, because, you know, he does have his job and family and all that, and that's the time that he can give. Instead of going out to the pub, he goes out and does book distribution. Be happy. Don't say, oh, you're in Maya. No, be happy. He does that for a while, then you'll see he'll start doing it on other days and on when it's holidays, and then slowly, slowly it'll expand. Right? Does that make sense? So then you find what someone can do. Like that. So that ability to find what someone can do and engage them in that and encourage them in that, that's preaching, that's leadership. You understand? Yeah. That's why the leader has to have vision. Does that make sense? The leader knows the whole thing, all the services. Then when he finds someone can do one of them, he engages them. It's not that, you know, square peg, you know, round hole square peg, that we have this one service and everybody has to do it. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're just doing Harinam in your temple, and then you have somebody join from the university and they, you know, like doing things at the university and opening clubs and doing things with the students there. Then you think, okay, I wasn't thinking about opening a college preaching program, but here's someone who could do that. So you engage them in that, rather than take them out of that and then say that they have to do something else. Does that make sense? So like that. So that's the expertise of understanding. Like that. So the point is here, this Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making, it's very, very simple. We like things simple. So here it is. It's connected to Krishna, you go towards Krishna. It's not connected to Krishna, you go away from Krishna. It's that simple. Like that. Okay, so now we've established that liberation actually means being in a personal relationship with the Lord. Right? Established on the spiritual platform in a spiritual body, doing spiritual activities. That's then, you know. Yeah. Then the jiva is without sin. Okay, let's go back to here. According to the Vedas, this is the ultimate liberation. Means becoming situated on the transcendental platform in a spiritual relationship. The Chandogya Upanishad also described the eight qualities attained by the jiva in liberation. Then Chandogya Upanishad. The jiva is without sin, or free from relation with sin and ignorance. He is free from old age, being ever young. Right? He is deathless, never leaving his spiritual body. He is peaceful, being free from lamentation, suffering, and craving. He is devoid of desire for enjoyment. He is without thirst, with no desire other than to serve the Lord. He has only desires to serve the Lord favorably. Whatever desires he has are fulfilled. Chandogya Upanishad 8.7.1. These eight qualities do not exist in the conditioned jiva. One should know the difference between the conditioned and liberated jivas by searching scriptures. Though the goal of liberation is laudable, the final attainment in liberation must only be the happiness of service to Bhagavan. As there is a danger of losing sight of the main goal by aspiring for secondary goals, it is better not to aspire for liberation. Those who hold in their hearts the desire for liberation from the beginning cannot attain advancement in the eternal rasas of bhakti. However, such a person may take shelter of karma or jnana. Without attaining the mercy of Krishna, he cannot attain even mukti. However much a person may take shelter of karma or jnana, without attaining the mercy of Krishna, he cannot attain even mukti. Among the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, liberation is the 9th, but the happiness of service to the shelter, Krishna, is the 10th. Right, so it means here, that's why it's very, very important that the focus is always Krishna, developing that love and affection for Krishna. There can't be any other goal. There may be other short-term goals that one is working for, but one has to be very, very careful. The focus on those may distract one from the main goal. As we see, Prabhupada would just focus on that. He would talk about other things. You follow Varnashram, you do this and that. He didn't make it a goal. Does that make sense? But as soon as we make it a goal, it becomes prominent. People hear about it. People know about it. But the question is then do they get distracted? Does that make sense? So it's very, very important that becoming freed from material entanglement, that's not a goal. That's just something that's done. Our goal is to get to Krishna. So all these other goals must be in relationship to Krishna. They can't be its own goal, and then in that you might forget Krishna. Because the point is even liberation you can only get by Krishna's mercy. Does this make any sense, or... So it's very, very important how these setting goals and all that are there. You know, modern management, they're like goal-oriented, this, that, but they're not focusing on this. The idea that it's connected to Krishna and it pleases Krishna is not part of the equation. So therefore, no one gets pleased. No one comes closer to the Lord. Right? So the devotees, then, they must take on their goals that... everything's in connection with Krishna, then it works nicely. Okay, so all those 8 qualities that were there, then those aren't there in the conditioned soul. They're only there in the liberated soul, because then he's freed from all the problems in the material world. But we notice in there that his not looking for his own enjoyment and working for Krishna's pleasure, then that's very, very important. Because that's what his focus will be. His focus is not, I am peaceful, or I'm not bothered by the material energy. That's not his focus, just like here. The goal is not to be liberated. His focus is Krishna's happiness. Right? That's what makes it, that will give the drive to, you know, I'll cultivate these qualities. Right? No other desire than to serve the Lord. Right? He has only desires to serve the Lord favorably. So that will be the central quality. Then, wanting to serve the Lord, then he's without sin, because he's not connected with sin or ignorance. Because he wants to serve the Lord, then therefore he's eternal. Right? He's ever youthful. Right? Not serving Krishna, that makes you old. You know what I'm saying? He is deathless. If you're always serving Krishna, you're deathless. You never leave the spiritual body. You're always situated on the transcendental platform. Serving Krishna, you're peaceful, being freed from lamentation, suffering, and craving. Because there's nothing to gain other than Krishna's pleasure. So you're not looking for anything for yourself. Absorbed in Krishna, then you're not trying to enjoy for yourself. Absorbed in Krishna, then you don't have any other desire than to serve the Lord. Does that make sense? Then all these have meaning. Otherwise, they're just a list of qualities. So when we put it this way, then it sounds very reasonable. The other is like, oh, so many qualities. Right? So we've already heard all these before. Otherwise, oh, where is this? I've never heard this 8 like this. No, but we've all heard this. But it's always been in relationship to Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, technically you're not going to hear anything new. Right? You basically all heard it. You've been around, you've heard the philosophy, you've read the books. What may be there is a a perspective or becoming aware of what you've heard. Otherwise, we hear so many things and we're not aware of it, we may not use it so efficiently. But we're aware of what we know, like that, then it makes it better. Does that make sense? Like that. Yes.
We've heard about Charlotte de Prem.
Yes.
And some people say they shouldn't, that not in the gritty means trying to remove. Should we be focused on something else other than the different states?
Anartha Nivritti means, see, it's like if you're looking at Anartha Nivritti technically, what is in there means when you're just enthusiastic and think, you know, oh, hey, I learned a little bit about this and so now I'm a big pundit, then they're not conscious of the situation. When you're in the thing of thick, thin, you're not conscious. It's just sometimes you're happy, you're focused, and sometimes you're not. You're still not in control. Or the other thing is, well, you know, should I do this? You know, should I be engaged in service like this? You know, that engaging the senses and all that, because that's, you know, considered good. But, or should I be very detached and, you know, very staunch and stuff like that? And that's there, like that. So it's not, you don't really become conscious until you decide, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to be involved in Maya. So war with Maya means I become aware of it. So then, in other words, what is that war with Maya? It's not something separate. It just means within Bhajana Kriya, now you're aware that I want to do this nicely and focused. Because technically, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, and Nishta are the same thing. Like we saw before when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was describing it, he just, you know, you have faith, you take up the association of devotees, you follow those devotees, and then you'll get a taste for Krishna consciousness. So technically you think he skipped over Anartha Nivritti and Nishta. But technically it's called Anishta Bhakti and Nishta Bhakti. So what's the difference between the two? Anartha Nivritti. Does that make sense? One's with anartas, so one's overwhelmed by them, so one's devotion is not stable. And when one becomes purified, then one becomes stable. Right? So it's actually technically the same thing. So it's not a separate focus. The focus is, what's different is that determination, that I'm going to be serious about performing the activities I'm already doing. It's not that now at Anartha Nivritti, you know, I stand on my head or do something different. It's not different. It's the same thing. It's just that, you know, I'm going to chant my rounds properly. I'm going to, you know, do my service with proper focus. I'm going to behave properly with the devotees and not be offensive. Right? Like that. And so why is it a war with Maya? Only because for time immemorial, we've been doing the opposite. And so Maya doesn't want anyone who's unqualified going and bothering Krishna. So she's going to test. You say, now you're going to deal nicely with devotees, so then she'll test that. Does that make sense? Yes.
My father had a book kind of a preacher from Christian tradition in the 1870s. And he was saying, until you become aware of illusion, then she's got to firmly in the grasp.
Yeah. So until you become fixed in it, it means the anartas are prominent. But because you're not conscious of it, you don't really notice that, and so you're fully engaged. You know, that's all that's asked. There's what you're conscious of, that's what you should be engaging. So when the anartas are so great, you're not conscious, you're just by habit going on through your, you know, different emotional stages and changes and enthusiasm or lack of it and all that, and you're unaware that actually there's a lot of illusion here. But because you're only aware a little bit, that's all you're responsible for. So therefore, you go to the temple, you be with the devotees, you do some service like that, and then you go home and then you just are in your normal lifestyle. But you're not aware of it. You're not thinking, I shouldn't be doing this. You're just unaware that you're just over, you know, caught up in it by habit. So therefore, you'd say this person's advancing nicely. You understand? Like that. But as they perform these things, they become purified, then they'll become aware. Right? As they become aware, then that's when you start to to then be, you have to be determined. Because if you're not determined, then Maya will catch you. Like that. So then, once determined, so then that will then go further. So that determination then means you're going to be not necessarily, you're determined to do the right thing, but it's not necessarily that, how you say, it will, you'll always be successful. You're saying, but with practice, after time, then you will become successful. And then once you become successful, then she has another trick, is that you're successful in devotional service. She doesn't bother that. You have skills, you have abilities. She leaves that alone, because now she can catch in another way. Now you think, now I'm very advanced, I'm a very good devotee. So then she'll catch you that way. Right? So that way, then you have to be very, very careful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like that, these things are all there, but it's the mentality that's important. Because when that mentality is fixed like that, then it becomes nishta. Because technically, one's not completely free from all material desires until you're liberated. So that means before that, there's always some anartha to get rid of. But the point is the anarthas aren't prominent. So the process of bringing them from anarthas being prominent to anarthas not being prominent, that's called anartha nivritti. When they're prominent, it's bhajanakriya, you know, anishta bhajanakriya. When they're not prominent, then that becomes anishta bhakti. I mean, becomes nishta bhakti, right? Because one's fixed in devotional service, right? Then did that answer the question?
Yeah.
So in that, then these are different perspectives of looking at, you know, the same thing. So we don't become distracted and say, you know, oh, I'm so full of anarthas. No, it's a matter of, okay, you're full of anarthas, but how do you get rid of anarthas? By lamenting about it? No, being aware of it, that's good. That you're aware of it, that's a nice thing. But sitting around and thinking about it and lamenting, oh, I'm so full of anarthas, that's not going to do any good. How do you get rid of anarthas? By bhajanakriya, by serving Krishna in the association of devotees. So you'll be more determined to do that nicely. And then they'll go away. So it doesn't take a separate endeavor. It's a matter of being aware of the endeavor that's already there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Many times we think it's something separate. It's not separate. It's just being aware of what's already going on.
What can we do that the anarthas are not too overwhelming? Because sometimes they distract us from our focus to.
Because the point is what's the advantage? What's the advantage of being overwhelmed? Do you get any benefit? No. So then why do that? You know what I'm saying? The soul wants to benefit himself. So being overwhelmed by anarthas doesn't benefit him. Does that make sense? So why do it? So in that way, one's determined to not do that. By habit, you may be doing that, but you decide, I don't want to do this anymore. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen more, but it means you're determined that it shouldn't happen anymore. Does that make any sense? Or? Okay, now here he's pointed out there's 10 topics. So liberation is the 9th topic. The 10th topic then is the shelter of Krishna. Right? So taking full shelter of Krishna. So now going on from there, then, quote, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th subject matter, the shelter of the devotees, is described. I pay my respects to that supreme goal, the goal of the universe, whose name is Krishna. Bhavartha Deepika 10.1. Those who develop the happiness of serving Krishna in their heart have in their grasp all the other 9 topics of Bhagavatam, including liberation. To make this fact clear, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Quote, the followers of the Varnashram institution accept the regulative principles of the four social orders and four spiritual orders. However, if one carries out the regulative principles of these orders, but does not render transcendental service to Krishna, he falls into the hellish condition of material life. There are many philosophical speculators belonging to the Mayavad school who consider themselves liberated and call themselves Narayana. However, their intelligence is not purified unless they engage in Krishna's devotional service. Right, so he's making it very clear here is that here you're talking about proper following, like we mentioned before, proper following of Varnashram and the proper, you know, how you say, the understanding of liberation and determination for that. But unless they're connected to Krishna, they're useless. Right? That doesn't mean that these processes are useless. It means if they're not connected to Krishna, they're useless. Otherwise, they will bind you to the material world. Right? Through following the Varnashram, right, following the process of liberation, if it's not done in connection with Krishna, then you will be conditioned. Right? Maya will catch you. Does that make sense? That's her business. If you're not going towards Krishna, her business is to catch you. That's what she does. Because you're either going towards Krishna or away from Krishna. And if it's not towards Krishna, it is away from Krishna. And if it's away from Krishna, it means it's towards Maya. Right? It's not like you have any other alternative. Since mukti cannot be obtained by practice of karma, jnana, yoga, austerity, any other process, even jnanis utilize bhakti, though in a polluted form, to obtain liberation. The pure devotee does not even pray for such liberation, but that liberation humbly submits herself to their service. From Krishna Karyanamrita. O Lord, if you think our devotion is fixed, then reveal your transcendental useful form in our hearts. Prayers for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are no longer necessary, because mukti herself, with folded hands, stands waiting to serve us. Dharma, artha, and kama remain waiting our orders to serve your lotus feet. Krishna Karyanamrita 107. The liberation obtained... Sorry.
The four spiritual orders...
But it still means the Varnashram, see, the Varnashram is the natural culture of the devotees. Since being a devotee is the natural, it's the natural activity of the soul. Therefore, when they come to the material world, then that culture that they would follow as a devotee, that's what's recommended, whether they're a devotee or not. So they're following the same process. The problem is that if you don't do it in connection to Krishna, it still keeps you in the material world. So it's the point of performing action not connected to Krishna that keeps you in the material world. And it's the fact of performing activity connected to Krishna that takes you out. So it's not that then therefore it doesn't matter what we do. In one sense, yes, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you are doing it for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So, but to stick to the unpurified conditioned nature, that you can say that's a nature, but it's not necessarily the best, offering to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? In other words, we try to purify ourselves in that purified state, then offer something higher, right? So here it's mentioning that the liberation and everything, whatever it is you're looking for, is obtained through devotional service. Because if through jnana they can't get liberation. Therefore we see that sometimes the impersonalists, they take up bhakti to try to get that. But the problem is their bhakti is impure because they think they are the deity. So they're worshipping themselves. But if that worked, why aren't they liberated? You know what I'm saying? If worshipping yourself... You know, that they've been doing that for a long time, so why aren't they liberated? So that means you actually technically have to worship someone else. You know? And so, yeah, so that's the problem, is why it's polluted, it's not pure. Right? So it looks like it's devotion, but it's not. So the point is, if performing devotional service, then all the elements, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, then they're all already there. To be engaged like that. So it's very, these points are very, very fine. The point is, Krishna's connected, it's all right. Right? But these things, but if Krishna's not connected, then it's a problem. And then if it's fully connected, means we will fully be on the transcendental platform. So if we're not, then that means something's not fully connected. So then it's a matter of finding that out. Right? In other words, if we have the capacity, ability, why not find it out? Otherwise, you just chant and be in the association of devotees and avoid the offenses, you know, do what you should. It'll all come automatically anyway. But if you are, you know, think you're philosophically inclined, those kind of, then why you wouldn't use that ability to figure that out? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then you see is, okay, by attachment in this way, that's what's keeping me back. So you get rid of that attachment in that way, then the problem goes away. Right? That because you're doing already engaged in Krishna service, so that won't be keeping you back from serving Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
You sort of answered it just in the second bit, but I just clarify. So if we have Krishna gives us understanding of something, so you can understand this is the higher, this is the fact that you have a comprehension of the higher, even if you still may have a conditioned nature.
Mm-hmm. That's because progressive.
Because you have the understanding of something, the beginnings of understanding of something, then to not take that higher path means that then you're not serving Krishna. So by having the awakening of the understanding means that you should always take that.
You should take that, yes, regardless. But it doesn't mean that you'll necessarily always be successful in the beginning. But that determination will keep you going in that direction. Yes, and that is either laziness or it means it's ignorance. So is that ignorance, is it just laziness or is there doubts or is there misgivings? Because anartha nivritti means removing all the doubts and misgivings.
And the fact that this is being awoken means that you are, like you say, even if there's failure, the fact that Krishna is awaken this point in you. It's not that
one gives up.
It's not that it's false reality. You know, it's that Krishna only gives us what we need. Krishna gives us guides in ways that Krishna knows. You know, like Krishna knows our hearts, so he gives intelligence and gives understanding. So it's not that.
So the point is you keep continuing. Just like the child gets up for the first time to walk, what's generally the next thing that happens. Yeah, so now, if they didn't have determination, they would never walk. You know, they would stand up, fallen over, and thought, well, that was stupid. And then that was it. You know, but they keep at it. Right? Because it's the nature of the human being to walk. So it's the nature of the soul to be on the, you know, in service to Krishna. So even if it doesn't work necessarily so well, one keeps at it. And by keeping at it, then it will start to work. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that someone's making a mistake, that's not the problem. It's not being aware and trying to correct it. And if even in their attempt, it hasn't happened, that still is not the problem, right? Because that just by habit, practice, will develop good habit. You know what I'm saying? So it's whatever you do. You want to start cooking. The first time you cook, it's not necessarily that it was great. So, but you keep at it, and with practice, you'll become good at it. Does that make sense? So these things are very fine points, fine only in because they're making the distinction between what is Krishna conscious and what's not. Because the point is it's connected to Krishna, that's there, but then we also have to remember is that the whole universe is connected to Krishna. So how do we deal with Krishna's universe? Because if it's a matter of, oh, then we can do anything in Krishna's service, that's there, but that anything that you're doing is still connected to Krishna. Right? So you're there, but the point is because it's, in other words, it's already connected to Krishna. It's a matter of whether you're aware of it and you make the endeavor. Does that make sense? The daisies growing in the backyard already belong to the mom. But when the kid goes out and picks them and gives them to the mom, she's happy. Does that make sense? So everything in the universe is already connected to Krishna. It's working on his laws. Now it's a matter of what sphere you are engaged in. Are you connecting that with Krishna? You know? So do you see the connection? So just to say, you know, therefore it doesn't matter what we do, it's true, but at the same time is, since it is Krishna already, why would that be good enough? That's where you start from. But then as you become more aware, then it's, okay, I'm dealing with Krishna in the material energy in this way, so why wouldn't I want to do it so it would please him? Because I'm doing it because it pleases me, though I'm doing that in connection with Krishna. But ultimately, shouldn't it be that I have no desire? Because it mentions that's one of the eight qualities, is to not have a desire for a result. So then I would be doing it to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Is that, you're getting somewhere, or? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Through which? What? Sadhana Shastra, okay. What about Guru? Why are you avoiding Guru here? Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
This is where we get the guidelines of what Krishna wants.
Yes, that's where we get the guidelines. Because it's authority. That's how we know what to do. Just like, let's say, you're born in a family, right? And this family has its traditions. Where do you learn those traditions from? But specifically, who first? Yes. And generally these traditions are established by? Yes. You're not sure. Okay. So then that means, because the Veda is considered the mother, Krishna is the father. Does that make sense? So we know what is to be done by approaching the mother. And she tells us what it is to be done that pleases the father. Right? That's how we know who the father is. Probably gives the example. It's that you don't know who your father is, you ask your mother. Right? At least she's supposed to know. Like that. Does that make sense? She has a good idea who it might have been, you know. So does that make sense? Yeah. So the Shastra is the mother, so that's why also you can't reject. Otherwise, the only purpose of the Shastra is to show you Krishna. So if you reject the Shastra, then how else are you going to know who Krishna is? How else, if you don't ask your mother who your father is, who are you going to ask? You know, you think I'm going to do it my own way, but what is this my way? You know what I'm saying? I mean, Sinatra's dead. It didn't help him, so. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so now continuing with this liberation. The liberation attained by the devotees is of two types, Swarupya Mukti and Vastu Mukti. One who, due to practice, attains a spiritual form, even in this material world, is served by liberation before giving up the material body. Though the body belongs to the material world, the soul is absorbed directly in the spiritual world. One should understand that such a person has obtained Swarup Mukti. When such a person gives up his material body, he attains Vastu Mukti by Krishna's mercy. The liberation of the Advaitavadis is of two types, Brahma Sayuja, merging into the effulgence of the Lord, and Ishwara Sayuja, merging into the Lord's body. Neither of these types of liberation is the natural position of the jiva. In the Brahmananda Purana, these people are described. Quote, Siddha Loka, the abode of Brahman, lies beyond the material world. In that place reside the asuras, such as Kamsa, killed by the Lord, and the Mayavadis, absorbed in the bliss of Brahman. Brahmananda Purana. So that means these kind of persons live in the Brahmajyoti. Like that, so it's like the jnanis and yogis, though they attempt to separate themselves from the material energy by meditations such as Aham Brahmasmi and Tattvamasi, do not obtain the supreme spiritual goal of being situated in the spiritual bodies. So you have here Sarupya Mukti. It says Sarup Mukti and Vastu Mukti. Those who, through meditation in this lifetime, by their devotional service, come to the transcendental platform, and in their spiritual form, through meditation, then they serve the Lord. Then that's sarup mukti, right? It means they're liberated because they're actually situated in their consciousness in their spiritual form, though they're still here in this world, right? Then, leaving this world, then they come to the platform of vastu. Right, then they're situated only in their spiritual body directly and not there by meditation. Right? That's why Raghunath Das Goswami, he offers his obeisances to the Brajavasis, both those who are in Vastu Mukti, you know, those who are in their spiritual forms, and those who are there in their spiritual forms through meditation. He mentions both. Like that. Does that make sense? So the devotees then have these two forms of liberation, right? So, and this all comes on the platform of Brahma Bhuta, right? From there beyond, then these things come up. For the impersonalists, then they have to Brahma Sayuja, where they merge into the Brahman, and Ishwara, where they merge into the body, like that. That makes sense. Basically seem to end up in the same kind of place, but Siddha Loke.
The body of the Lord is not a lesser.
As a goal, yes, it's lesser. See, the impersonalist doesn't know that there's a spiritual form. So his merging into the Brahmajyoti, you know, matches that mentality. But someone who knows that the Lord's form is spiritual and then wants to merge into it, that's pretty foolish. You know, the other is unfortunate. This is more unfortunate. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because then here you have the form. Instead of serving the form, you merge into it. The other, you don't know that there's form. They don't know that you have form and God has form. So then merging into the Brahman, then, you know, it works. But it's still not going to get you anything. You're still going to come back after some time. It's only going to give you temporary relief from the material world. But the Sarupya Mukti, I mean not Sarupya, what is that? What do you call it? Sarup, what do you call it?
Sayuja.
The Sayuja Mukti, no, that was the going into the body. Yeah, Ishvara Sayuja. Then you're going to you see the Lord, and then you merge into the, but it's still the same. You're only merging into the effulgence of his qualities, stuff like that. So it's the same thing. It's just that the method is slightly different. Okay. It's basically, that's one, you know, only temporary solution and unfortunate that you could have gotten more. You did know about the spiritual form, but you didn't take advantage of it. Anything else? Any other questions on this last chapter? Chapter 8, yes.
And those who know the spiritual form of the Lord, the yogis or also
the yogis. Basically the yogis. Because the yogis have to meditate on Narayan. So they know that. They know he's transcendental. But of that, then there will be two classes. One that are using it as a process to know him as a person and develop a relationship, or those who want to merge into the Lord. Yeah. Is that make sense? Like that. So, because the first one, they attain to the same position as someone following devotional service. Like Bhagavad Gita explains that. You know, you have that picture of the yogi doing meditation and the devotee is doing their service, you know, worshiping the deity, and at the end you see them both doing kirtan, right? Because ultimately, if you see the Lord and surrender to Him, then you're going to take up devotional service. But the other is, and so you only, once you come to the platform of liberation, do you take up the service. But the other person's already taken it up before liberation. Does that make sense? So it's much easier. So the devotional process of liberation is much easier since Krishna is Muktipad. He's the one that gives liberation. So if you're worshiping the person who gives liberation, that comes a lot easier than not worshiping that person. Does that make sense? Because otherwise they're meditating on him, but it's not actual service. Right? It's only an appreciation, but it's not service. Right? Like we were discussing before, Shanta Ras is not dynamic, it's passive. You appreciate the Lord's qualities. Only when that intensifies, then you want to serve the Lord. Then that becomes dasya. Right? So the meditation doesn't, without actually the concept of service, is not bhakti. Does that make sense? It's simply an appreciation. Right? So now the devotee, he's appreciating the Lord's qualities, but that's in connection with the stai bhav that I am servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's active. While the other hasn't identified, I am servant of God. Right? Once he sees God, then he surrenders. Does that make sense? You know, or if he is devotee, but he's using that process to realize the Lord, then it's only after realizing the Lord, then he starts doing service for the Lord. Otherwise, before that, he's just doing his Ashtanga Yoga practices. Does that make sense? It's passive. While the devotional process is active. So its goal is to come to that active platform. But the process is so perfect, you can be doing that already. Does that make sense? Yes.
How can you be doing that already? Is there any example of that?
Already. You're sitting here, so that's not already? Why? What are you doing here?
I was thinking that
you've been sent by MI5 or MI6. So you wanna, what's going on here in Mayapur? Why the smoke? What is that? Is it some way to control? I mean, all these people in this room are all controlled. Is it the smoke? Is that actually, you know, what's doing it? Like that, or?
I was thinking like Raghunath Das Goswami, you mentioned in the class how he said he offers obeisances to those who are liberated and.
Yeah, but they're doing it's their service to him. You understand? One is their service is through meditation. They're rendering service like that Brahmin. He's doing meditation. But what's he doing in the meditation? In Nectar Devotion explains about the Brahman. What's he doing? Yeah, so he's doing puja and everything like that in his meditation. Right? The yogi is not doing anything in his meditation. He's only seeing the forearm form of the Lord and thinking about that. So where's the service? Other than there's some appreciation that he's the Supreme Person. You understand? But the other is that he is the Supreme Person. Let's do something for him. Let's please him. Is that okay? Is that catching? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we'll end here. Then we'll start chapter. Today is what? Tuesday. So on Thursday we'll start chapter 9. Problem is the last question ended a minute ago. Like that. But on Thursday, you can ask. You'll remember or you'll forget. Okay. Om Ha.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Govinda Premanandi. What is this star? Thank you.